Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 288 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. You spend a third of your life in sheets. It's about time for a bedding upgrade. Brooklinen makes it possible to get amazingly comfortable sheets at home for an even more amazing price.
Brooklinen was founded in early 2014 by husband and wife Vicky and Rich Fulop. Their mission? To make five-star hotel quality sheets more affordable and easy to order.
Mix and match over 25 colors and patterns to make your bedroom just right. I got mine in graphite and steel Oxford stripe, and they perfectly complement my existing charcoal comforter.
My Brooklinen sheets are so comfy, I don't want to get out of bed. They're smooth and soft, and I love that they go with my bedroom decor and color scheme. I got a completely white set.
My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com.
Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever. And now, on to our read-along. Week we are continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along with chapter 6 entitled For Auld Lang Syne.
You know, it finally came to me how we could make that less awkward. We could say, and I could put it in the show notes, in our read-along of The Fiery Cross.
Nah, where's the fun of that?
Oh, it's okay, you want to live dangerously.
Look, we're really good at clunky. Clunky's our thing now. Let's just be clunky.
Where did that come from? Gracious. Way to be negative.
Only if you make it a negative.
Clunky is never wonderful unless you're, I don't know, like a prop in some play or something. I don't know. Christine O. writes, Robert Burns wrote the poem Auld Lang Syne in 1788, but there are earlier poems and songs that use the phrase, and apparently when Burns submitted the poem, he said it was from a song of olden times and that he, quote, took it down from an old man.
Thief!
The poem was set to the tune of a traditional folk song and is loosely translated to mean for the sake of old time. And that is, she got that information from Wikipedia. And Carrie R. writes, Diana is always so careful and clever when selecting her chapter titles. This chapter is no exception. The poem was set to a traditional Scots tune, and in most of the English-speaking world, and many other places for that matter, is sung on Hogmanay and New Year's Eve. However, it is also sung to symbolize a time of endings and new beginnings, such as at a wedding, a funeral, graduations, or the end of a social gathering like a ceilidh or a scouting jamboree. The themes of endings and new beginnings are woven throughout this chapter.
Can we start and end every like major function in our life with this from now on?
With this song?
Oh, sure.
Well, it's out of
like copyright?
Yes. So we can sing it every single episode if you want.
No. I mean like pot abroad.
She's like, no, I really didn't mean it because that's a no. Roger is watching Bree help her mom prep the contents of bottles for her medical practice. And he's admiring her wrists and other bits, her womanliness. And he noticed that others, namely...
I'm pretty sure her womanliness was not on display.
Not the front part, but the backside. Not the skin, but...
Careful.
Her
You're digging.
Her No, I'm not.
You were digging a hole right now.
Her shape. And he noticed that others were noticing too. Women were watching, quote, with faint and puzzled frowns, and the men, quote, with a covert admiration tinged with earthly speculation that gave him an urge to step into the clearing and assert his rights to her on the spot, unquote. Mm. And then we learned that he was observing her from the cover of the trees. He wasn't very close to her, too close to her. No one, he was observing people unobserved. And he leaves the cover of the trees and she sees him. And he invites her to come along for a little walk.
So like stalker. He's like creepy stalkering her from a tree.
I don't think that counts, is it? Nah. I mean, if it were somebody else and they did it consistently, maybe. But I don't think a one-off is a stalker. It's usually a pattern.
He sounds real familiar. I feel like he's done this before.
Oh, and with
he
her?
Will, and he will do it again.
Well, he invites her to come along for a walk. And he realized that he wanted to show the other men that she was his and that she'd answer his, quote, call. He knew that he was that petty, and he recognized that within himself, and he was a little bit embarrassed by it. She came to him with a small packet in her hand, quote, wrapped in paper and tied with thread, and he leads her away from the path.
I bet she got him a hair ribbon.
Have you read the chapter?
Yes, I'm just teasing.
Okay.
Remember, he didn't get her a hair ribbon?
I don't know. She isn't all that comfortable with the blood and guts. She can stand it. She can help her mom. But she's like, it's not my thing. And she jests with him about what he might have looked for in a wife, at least in the 18th century. And neither of them actually want someone who dealt with blood, whether it was someone in the medical field or someone who was like, a killer or someone who, killed a lot, killed regularly. And we learned that Jamie will not teach her any bad words in Gaelic, though she does get some pretty great French lessons from Marcelly. So that's funny. She hands him the packet that she was holding.
That they stuck true to that with the show, but not with the bad Gaelic, but just him not explaining all of the Gaelic to her. And she had to go to somebody else to get the translation. So they stuck with that. That's pretty, good adaptation.
She hands the packet to Roger and said it was a wedding present and seems one that she wasn't too enthused with. She says it was embroidery silk from Mrs. Buchanan for our wedding clays or shrouds. She's upset.
Shroud.
Yep. She just found out that it was her wifely duty to, quote, sit down the morning after the wedding and start spinning cloth for her shroud. So that it's ready for when and if she dies in childbirth.
Wow.
Quote, and if I'm a fast worker, I'll have time to make one for you too. Otherwise, your next wife will have to finish it. That's fun. She's really upset. Like, she's not just like, grossed out is the wrong term. She's not just bothered because of this morbid thought, but she's kind of pissed off at Mrs. Buchanan. And the thing that she's really pissed off at, and she says this, is that she has all these opinions and she's stating all these opinions about Mrs. Buchanan. But she's like, the problem is she's not freaking wrong, because this leads to a very serious conversation about the danger of the time they're living in. Not even from like others, but from illness or from childbed or, so many possibilities that things that they took for granted in their own time are much more dangerous in this time. Roger, ever a man, asks, you've no need to fear, Hen. You had no trouble with Jemmy, I.
Uh-huh.
And so she kind of gives him like a little bit of a look. And then he says, so you're willing there should be a next time, are you? Mrs. Buchanan notwithstanding. So they chat about the possibility of remaining celibate and the inconsistency of 18th century contraception, as evidenced by Marcelly and Joan.
Well, they were clearly not taking their celibacy talk very seriously, because they went against that pact very quickly.
Well, he says that, yes, he would be celibate to remain with her if that's what it took. And as he starts to say it, he's grabbing her ass as he says it. Then they begin to go at it, and she admits she doesn't want celibacy, or at least, quote, once more before we quit for old time's sake, unquote.
As you do.
Work. Yep. The 2019 FabFitFun Spring Box is on sale now. Treat yourself with items in it such as a Sunny Life Lover's Picnic set in Malibu and a gorgeous water bottle by Swell.
Here in California, we've been experiencing more rain than usual this year, and opening this spring box put me in an instant good mood. I can't wait to take my picnic set out for a spin. It's like Christmas four times a year.
I loved getting this box. I feel pampered, and I like to make it an experience. You know, music, maybe some candles. I pull out the newsletter and I read through it and I look at everything. I love it.
FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box delivered four times a year with full-size beauty, fashion, home, fitness, and wellness products for just $49.99 a box. You can customize your box by choosing some products and add-ons with each box, or be surprised.
Sign up for FabFitFun today. These boxes always sell out. Use our code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first box.
Go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first box. That's over $200 for only $39.99. Go to FabFitFun.com and use our code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box.
Christine O writes, in the heat of passion, Brianna and Roger opt for intercourse just one more time before they try celibacy. Brianna says, it's for old time's sake. Considering that they haven't even gotten married yet, we can probably expect a lot of sex for Auld Lang Syne in their future. Carrie R. writes, of endings, this chapter begins with Roger and Brianna engaged in a lighthearted conversation about how neither fits the ideal of an 18th century husband or wife. The way of living they are used to was left behind when they went through the stones. Brianna is holding a small bundle that she has received as a wedding present, some embroidery floss, which is meant to be used to make her and Roger's winding clays or burial shroud. This bothers Brianna as she explains to Roger she'll probably most likely need one after she dies in childbirth, as women, many women did at the time. So after they have a rumble and a tumble, there's more rain. A lot of rain.
Is that
here.
What you're calling that?
A rumble and a tumble? Yeah. They
I
get
don't
up.
Think you've ever called it that.
I haven't. They get up, quote, this is about Roger, quote, he'd lost his stock and the cut under his jaw had reopened. Now, that may be meaningless other than just saying what happened, but
Did you look up the meaning of that?
No, I did not.
On an online dictionary?
No, but just like I said in the last chapter or two chapters ago, that Roger had cut his...
I believe it was the first chapter.
Chapter one, that Roger had cut his neck or slice his neck open a little bit shaving. Yeah, these things, you know, yeah, I'm gonna mention them, and that's all I can say. He apologizes to her twice and she says it's all right, it's okay. Now he's apologizing for like, oh, sorry, I slipped and fell into your vaheen, right? So and she's like, it's all right, and then she says it's okay. So he's apologizing for it, but he did not rape her. So it was both of them. But I understand that he feels he carries the guilt because whenever they do this, potentially puts her in danger, or it puts her in danger. And then she rushes to reassure them both, quote, it's only 6 months and I'm still nursing Jemmy. I think it's still safe. So he's having a moment. He is kind of like figuring out, he's like, we're not actually married. And and she thinks he's a little like, you know, upset that they didn't wait till they're married or something like that. He's a little dismayed that their hand fasting is up, but they're not yet married. It's like in that middle zone, I guess. And he's thinking about how dangerous marriage and motherhood was for a woman. And he realizes he'll be risking, as I said earlier, risking her life if they keep doing it. He says, oh, God, Bree, I want to tell you that I'll keep you safe, save you and Jemmy from anything that might threaten you ever. It's a terrible thing to think that it might be me who would be the threat, that I could kill you with my love, but it's true. End quote.
Is love in quotations?
No. Again, she says, it's all right. I'm sure it'll be okay. I've got the hips for it. Everybody says so. Jug butt. That's me. So here she is. I don't know. I think it's just this time in history. And today, this is being recorded on International Women's Day. But the thing that I noticed that is the third time. Like, she's the one who's in danger, right? Potentially dying in childbirth. And he feels bad. And I get it. That's I guess, kind of him. It's understandable that he would feel bad. But why is she, the one who actually might be dying, having to reassure him it's okay? I understand it at a human level, but it just seems odd to me that it's the woman telling the man it's going to be okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
She's trying to calm him, but still, it was odd. It was just odd to me that it happened so many times. It was not once, like three times. So Roger tells Brianna what Ronnie Sinclair said to him about how he, about picking a good last. He said, you start at the bottom and work your way up. So that was funny. Mm-hmm. That was funny. She gets real. You want a baby, don't you? She's like, I understand. She understands. They were both only children, but she'd had two loving fathers and a mother. He'd had one father who was gone, meaning the Rev, and she had the Murrays and Jem. Quote, but Roger was an orphan, alone in the world for such a long time. His parents gone before he knew them, his old uncle dead. He had no one to claim him, no one to love him for the sake only of his flesh and bone. No one save her. Little wonder if he hungered for the certainty she held in her arms when she nursed her child. Unquote. And then he gives her his wedding present, and or a wedding present. It's a doll.
Dolls are bad.
Oh, gosh. Dolls are evil.
We know what happened with the last season with dolls. The doll that killed all the people.
What are we talking about?
The doll. The Poopa.
Oh, sorry. Poopa makes sense. Doll. I didn't even think about that. I was thinking, wait, that wasn't a doll. That was like a thing that Leary put under her thing. And that was season one.
Girl.
I didn't know. So I'll read about the doll first. Quote, she opened the cloth and a pair of black button eyes looked up at her. The doll wore a shapeless smock of green calico and the red yarn hair exploded from its head. Unquote. He'd gotten it.
I immediately thought of like Raggedy Andy and Raggedy Ann.
So her response, quote, there'll be a next time. I can't say when, but there will. Unquote.
I can.
A summer. Very lovingly says, thanks, Jugbutt.
Jugbutt.
It was cute. Later, he's worried about his hair and how he looks or how he'll be looking at his wedding. And he has something that he has to tell her. Like, this is all about, well, this part anyway is, no, not this part. Like, all of it. So in the beginning, he observes her from the cover of the forest or the trees, whatever. And he wants to impress the others and show the others that he does not that he owns her, but that like she'll be at my beck and call, right? She loves me. Mm-hmm. Let me show you all you men who are ogling her. She's my woman and I'm going to show you this. So he does that. He loves her. There's no doubt about that, but it does kind of, you know, place her as a thing.
Mm-hmm. As a possession.
Exactly. A little bit below human, if you will. So that's the first thing. And he realizes it. I think he realizes it with embarrassment. So he doesn't stop it, but he does realize it. And then later on, which we haven't gotten there, they're having a discussion about, well, we get, oh, okay. So the first one is when the thing I just said. The second time when it's all about Roger, and it's not really, but it's just coming to me now that we're talking about it, is that she reassures him three times. She's the one that he's afraid might die, and she's afraid she might die. She knows it's a huge risk if she has a kid back in the 18th century. Yet she's the one who's reassuring him it'll be okay. So that's the second time it's kind of all about Roger, okay? Here's the third time coming up. Now, I don't think it was bad that he told her, but the reason he's about to tell her, we don't have the text here, and that's fine, but he's about to tell her, dictate to her, recite to her the contents of the letter he's already shared with Jamie. I don't know how I feel, and we'll have a discussion after I finish this part, or whatever. But I want to talk after we're done with this. I want to talk to you. I think we already had this discussion at the end of last book, but I want to know what you think. And you too, dear listener, what do you think of Roger not telling Brianna first? That's it's an interesting thing. So two times so far, Roger has, if not made it about himself, he's at least made it about himself slash also kind of treated Brianna as a possession. So the first one was a possession. The second one was not as a possession, but it was all about Roger. Like, let's make sure Roger feels okay. Okay, so before they get married, he has something to get off his chest. That part's all about Roger, right? He's doing it. Yes, I think it's right for him to tell her. But the reasons that Diana gives us, or the way she describes it, is like him, I have to feel better. I would be guilty. I would feel very guilty if I didn't tell her this. So I need to get this off my chest. Plus, she deserves to hear it. He has something to tell her. Quote, fathers and their notion of protection varied, after all, and he wasn't sure how she would see this one. Unquote. He tells her about a letter written to the Reverend from Frank. He had told Jamie last night, and now, remember the last night that was the end of DOA? I forgot to say it. Oh my gosh, it's the same day. Mm-hmm. I always open the episode. Sorry, guys, same day. Last day of the gathering. And now he wants to tell her about the letter before they're married. He recites it to her twice. She reacts to the gravestone of Jamie's in Scotland being fake. Frank had the Reverend make it. And she gets this confirmed. She's asking him questions and he's confirming it. Yes, it had been made by the Reverend at Frank's behest. And yes, Jamie will not be buried there. Quote, he meant the stone as a sort of acknowledgement, I think, a debt owed to your father, Jamie. Unquote. So, well, man, that brings up stuff too. Not that that's bad. None of that is bad. But this is, I'm sure Frank, of course, was part of this, doing this was about Claire, but I'm sure Brianna came into this equation. I'm positive. But again, it's about the dudes. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of dude stuff here. So Brianna, I have a lot of dialogue here. So Brianna says, but he couldn't know we'd ever find it, Mama and me. I don't know that he wanted you to find it, but he says that he may have felt he had to make the gesture at least. Okay, people, you know this, and we don't get necessarily any insight, but it does. Stuff like this tickles on the edges of the whole amorphous what Frank knew, right? So Roger continues, didn't Claire say that he'd meant to bring you to England just before he was killed? Perhaps he meant to take you there and make sure you found it and then leave it to you and Claire what to do. That is the thing. And I'm not going to go back and rehash it. You guys can go back and listen to that episode. I think it was in Voyager, right? Where you and I, or probably mostly me, does a deep dive into trying to reconcile.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You should have known that the second you said deep dive that it was all you.
Okay, that was me. So the reason I had a deep dive about this exact moment in Voyager about when he says, didn't Claire say that he'd meant to take you back to England, to bring you to England with him just before he was killed? And the answer, yes, the answer is yes. And when we talked about that scene in Voyager, when Frank and Claire are in bed that night or going to bed in, I think getting ready for bed. And he comes out with, so I want to take Brie with me. So that whole thing happened.
Right.
And the reason I wanted to take that deep dive was not just because, oh, let's think of all the possible things. No, it's that, okay, we're talking the books, not the show. So I'm not even going to, you guys can have, I'm not saying anyone has to change their mind about the show. And I'm not telling you have to like Frank. No. But the reason I'm so interested in this specifically, I don't even just mean what Frank knew. But Diana has said for, oh my gosh, years, that what agree with her or not, you don't have to like this and you don't have to agree with her. But Diana has said that there is no, like everything we know about Frank thus far is, well, at least especially up through Voyager, is through Claire's eyes. And Claire, we know, is not the most trustworthy narrator of all things. She's pretty good, but she doesn't, you know, she can't get inside everyone's head. So the reason I was so curious about deep diving into that specifically is when you have an author who says something like that, that either states full out that he did not have an affair or that there's no tangible proof. There's things that people use as proof or things that Claire tells us she believes is proof. But we don't get Frank's side of the story. So again, I'm not trying to be a Frank apologist. I'm just saying, okay, this happened.
Is that a thing?
An apologist?
Frank apologist? Is that like an official title?
Do you know what that, you know what an apologist is?
I know what an apologist is. I'm saying a Frank apologist.
That sounds like an interesting thing. I didn't tie the words
together.
Are
there more than just you? Is it a group of you? Is that a thing?
Anyone who basically is a fan of Frank and defends him to the end. That's what basically a Frank apologist would be. I wanted to see, okay, what? How are some ways that might explain why he did what he did? It's just complete speculation. But anyway, so you can go back and listen to that and listen to all my ideas that are potentially crazy wrong. But anyway, so it's so interesting when Roger brings that up here, when that he wanted to bring Bree to England with him just before he died. And Bree says about Frank, like kind of unbelieving, like, oh my gosh, he knew, Frank knew about Jamie surviving Culloden, but he didn't say it. They discuss the reasons for Frank's not, potential reasons for Frank's not telling Claire. He thought, you know, maybe Frank was afraid that he would lose her again, Claire, let alone Brianna. Quote, she would have had to choose to stay with us or to go with him, to Jamie. Roger says, to leave you behind or to stay and live her life knowing her Jamie was alive, maybe reachable, but out of reach. To break her vows on purpose this time and abandon her child or to live with yearning. I can't think that would have done your family much, your family life much good. And therein lies the conundrum.
I mean, it was already pretty uncomfortable.
Oh, Lord. Right? Just taking notes, like, again, revisiting the whole stuff with Frank and not even what Frank knew, but his death and the circumstances surrounding it and him not telling her. And then, of course, Claire being sent back through the stones by Jamie and then leaving Brianna. So much. Like, it just makes me, I don't have a tear break now, but I got like a major tear break reading this and taking notes. I had tears. It was just, because I revisit it in my head and in my heart. Quote.
And then again out loud.
Perhaps. Shut up. Quote. Perhaps Frank was afraid to give her the choice, but he did save her and you from the pain of having to make it again, at least then, unquote. So this, this could go into an entire discussion about stealing someone's agency, right? Regardless of whether Summer and I think that there was a benefit, or you guys think that, yeah, I think we can all agree there was a benefit to Frank not telling Claire. Benefit him, but it also, at least as Roger tells it, you know, maybe it saved, part of the reason was that it would save Claire the pain of having to make that decision, right? And save her from maybe living in whatever, thinking Jamie is potentially alive still, or right now at least back then, and I could go to him, but I could never leave my daughter. So it's a conundrum. It was a conundrum even when Frank died. So that is not necessarily, it's different, obviously. But if she had left, you could argue that if she had left Brianna when Frank was still alive, at least she'd still have a parent, right? So it's actually maybe not as bad as leaving Brianna with no one in the future.
But would she still have a parent?
If Frank were still alive?
Why would Frank still be alive just because she left?
No. What I'm saying is, if Frank, and we don't, okay, I'm not even talking what Frank knew and conspiracy. I'm not talking that. If Frank had chosen to tell Claire, say maybe not right away, but you know, maybe a few years, even 10 years into their marriage, whatever. If Frank had chosen to be honest with Claire and allow her to make the decision to stay or not, that doesn't necessarily change the fact that he died in a car crash. However, it may have led to different choices and different paths. You know what I'm saying? So his randomly, maybe not, getting into that car accident after he has a fight with Claire, that fight wouldn't have happened unless the way he told her was, look, he's still alive. I'm taking Bree. That's a whole, you know, that's odd. I'm just saying, if he had chosen to, you know, keep it mum, do his research, But tell her, you know, not wait 18 years, but maybe tell her, I don't know, 10, 15 years, whatever. Yeah, it saves her from having to make that decision, but it also steals her agency. That's all. Does she have a right to know? I think that's the basic question. And yes, him telling her doesn't necessarily mean he would have lived longer. But if he had told her at whatever point, and she had decided to go back to Jamie, say once Brianna graduated high school, let's just say. Yes, at that moment, I believe, I don't know if she would have left, but if she did, Brianna would have had one parent. She wouldn't have been leaving Brianna there. If Frank is dead, well, and that's what happened in the books, he's dead before she leaves her. But the way she finds out is not because Frank told her.
Right.
So who knows if this is the way Frank meant it to happen, them finding out. Who knows? I just like kissed and sucked on my mic. What the heck? Wow. There was like saliva involved. I don't even know what happened.
Stop talking.
You know, it's not going to happen.
I know.
Anyway, it's so interesting. So what do you, I'm like babbling on about. I want to know, what do you think? What do you think about Frank's choice? Do you think Claire had a right to know? Do you think he stole her agency? Just tell me about what you think.
Yes. I don't think any of those were wrong statements.
You have to give me more.
I mean, I don't.
No, I want to hear it. Yes. Okay. That's your point. You do think that, but I want to know.
I think that all of those things are possible all at the same time. And I think, you know what I mean? So all of the options you just gave could all have been concurrent.
Do you think that he made the wrong choice?
I don't think he thinks he made the wrong choice.
That's not what I asked you. Objectively, of course, I agree with you. I don't think, of course, he made the wrong choice. Do you think Frank made the wrong choice?
I think he made a choice.
Summer, you are dancing. So do you agree, or do you think that Claire had a right to know besides finding out about it oopsies after he died?
I mean, I don't know, because I'm kind of with Roger in that it wouldn't have made it anything easier, her knowing. It would have made everything harder. So on the one hand, you could argue that it was, you know, spiteful of Frank to keep that from her. But on the other hand, it was also kind of a kindness to keep that from her, because she wouldn't have left Bree. I don't think she would have left Bree. And instead she would have just felt guilty about how much she was resenting Brianna.
Perhaps. But if she flat out left Brianna after Frank died, once she's in college, grown up, and she's pretty much self-sufficient, like she could take care of herself, I think there is room for the argument that if she had found out, I don't think she would have left any young Bree. I don't think there's any evidence for that. But I think she may have gone back before Bree was 20-something.
Who can say?
Only Diana, and she didn't write it that way.
Exactly.
But it's interesting. It's very interesting. So Bree wonders what her choice would have been if she did know. Roger thinks that she would have stayed. Quote, "She made the choice once, did she not? Jamie sent her back to keep you safe, and she went." Roger wonders what Bree's choice would have been if it were the Bairn or him. And he's wondering about his motives in telling her about this letter before their wedding. Again, it goes back to, is he centering himself? Is this about Roger? a little bit, but mostly I would argue this one probably mostly not. He thinks it was an obligation to her, Brianna, telling her as well. Frank leaving the gravestone. He uses Bonnet as an example for a parent wanting their child to know the truth. It's like, look, if it were Bonnet, and she freaks out at this name, and she basically says, do not tell Jimmy.
I wonder why. Why would she possibly freak out at this name?
Of course. She freaks and says, do not tell Jimmy about Bonnet. And he promises, okay, I'll never tell him. And then, because there was a slight misunderstanding, she tells Roger that Bonnet does know about Jem. Surprise! And he thinks Bonnet thinks Jem is his.
And I wonder why, because she told him he was.
Yeah. She tells him, basically, she recaps the end of Gems of Autumn about Jamie's letter, because they weren't talking.
So you mean
and her
yesterday.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Yes. Jamie's letter, her needing to forgive Bonnet. And so she did. No, she wasn't sure that the child was his. It's just something that she said to give him some comfort because he was supposed to die. Christine O. writes, Roger turns the Frank, Jamie, Brianna scenario into a dialogue about Roger, Bonnet, and Jimmy. His mind seems completely muddled with questions. What starts out as a conversation about what Frank knew becomes all about what Roger wants to know. Consistent with their history of expressing their needs and desires to each other, this conversation takes a sharp left turn when Brianna tells Roger she met with Bonnet and told him she was carrying his child. Roger can't think past his jealousy and insecurity, even as Brianna is explaining what she did was for forgiveness and peace. He acts passive-aggressively when he says it's none of his business. Brianna says that there shouldn't be secrets between them, but when you tell a secret, sometimes there's another one behind it. I think this was Brianna's acknowledgement that they both understand Roger's real motivation for reciting the letter before they were married. Carrie R. writes, "This brings up some confusion for Brianna as she has to face the assumption that Frank played an active part in deceiving Claire. Hashtag what Frank knew. The beginning of the end of her perfect image of Frank as she begins to see that he was, in fact, human and subject to jealousy and deception." Some men approach them, they had just gone fishing. They were just having a good time. And they recognize Roger right away from having sung maybe the night before. Who knows? They're happy to meet the thrush. And they say one of their cousins is also going to be married that night. Bree enters the conversation with her Gaelic and startles one of the men. And this man says he's from Skye. Now, the men's overall joviality has dampened a bit with the one man's reaction to Bree's Gaelic. There always seemed to be like there was something there that was like underlined that I didn't get. She tells him that she was not born in Scotland, but Roger says he was. And that he says he knows many of the songs of the Highlands and Isles. And then one of the men brings Brianna a string of fish as a gift. She thanks them. And Roger arranges the Cayley with the men. And as she's feeling her chest expand and become painful, she tells Roger, "I need Jemmy." And he says he needs him too.
Aww.
Christine O. writes, "We get a poignant sense of loss and forgotten times in the conversation Bree and Roger have with Angus MacLeod from Skye. He has two sons, born in America, and clearly laments the fact that they will never know the land of their sires and grandsires. MacLeod is nostalgic about the Highland songs that Roger knows, and when Brianna accepts a wedding gift from MacLeod's sons, she thanks them in Gaelic, which deeply touches MacLeod. His spirits seem to lift with a bit of hope that the old times may, after all, not be forgotten." And finally, Carrie R. writes, "Of beginnings, Roger, Brianna, and Jemmy have created a new little family under difficult and emotionally charged circumstances. Their wedding is only hours away, and their future awaits. Roger is not shy about letting Brianna know that he would like another child that he is sure is his. And Brianna assures him that there will be another one at some point in the future. And one of the men's mothers had heard Roger sing at a fire the night before, and would like him to sing at the Cayley in Spring Creek for his cousin's wedding." Okay, so obviously Ginger did not read that very well. Because apparently I don't read well. They discuss some traditional Scottish folk tunes and each offers their genealogy and birthplaces in Scotland. The men admonish Brianna to have her husband teach her the Gaelic, so they in turn can teach it to their sons. And may they have many. Again, a poignant scene of looking back to an old life in Scotland, yet carrying the memories and traditions of their native home to a new land. It's such a lovely thread woven throughout the Outlander books.
So I was laughing internally because you were saying they're only a few hours away from their wedding. And in my brain, I was like, so like in about 30 chapters?
Oh, Lord. I thought you were going to say like, what's like five chapters? I don't think it's 30. I think it's between now and like chapter 10, but... Yeah, it's who knows? I haven't visited this in quite a while.
And that was chapter 6. Join us next week when we will be discussing chapter 7 entitled Shrapnel, chapter 8 entitled The Factor, and chapter 9 entitled Germ of Dissent. That's so ominous. And as always, if you'd like to join the conversation and sign up to be a contributor for one of our chapters for the Fiery Cross, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/Fiery Cross.
And as always, join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. You can join us at outlanderpod.com/group. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.